He battles scoundrels and pirates, and he also recovers stolen ships in the world's most troubled waters.
Max Hardberger, sea captain and repo man, tells all in his book called Seas. Nice to have you with us, Max.
Thank you.
You sound like Errol Flynn or Johnny Depp, you know, swashbuckler, you're out to get those pirates. That's amazing. How long have you been doing this?
Well, about 20 years.
How did you get started being a swashbuckling pirate seeker?
Well, I started as a rather mild-mannered ship captain. I don't know actually if my crew would call me mild-mannered, but I started as a ship captain, and one day my ship got seized and for a trumped-up charge, and I and my crew were going to get thrown in jail, and the ship was, my owner would lose his ship, so I decided not to let it happen, and I tricked the guards into getting off the ship, and I snuck out in the middle of the night, and I did it again with another ship that was owned by a company I worked for, and there was an article written about that, and the word kind of got around in the Caribbean that there was actually a guy that would be willing to do that sort of thing. And so when ship owners got desperate, I was about the one they had to call.
Now, you're a repo man. So you actually repossess ships. That's no small task. How the heck do you repossess a ship?
Well, it's just larger in some ways more complicated than repossessing a car, but the basics are the same. You have an owner who has failed to pay his mortgage, and you have a mortgagee with an immediate possessory right, and this, in my case, to a ship. Often they don't know where the ship is, of course. The ship could be anywhere in the world, and an owner who's trying to hide his ship is going to take it to outlaw ports where he doesn't have to worry about the ship being caught by Interpol.
Mm-hmm.
And so the owner really hasn't got much choice but to hire me. So the first thing I have to do is find the ship. After I find it, I have to do intelligence and some surveillance and find out the situation on board, whether the crew is hostile, whether the ship has been sabotaged or if it's ready to go. I have to know who's watching the ship in the port, how closely they're watching it, whether there are guards on board. Once I do my intelligence work and my preparatory work, then I have to bring my crew in and we sneak on board one way or the other and then try to head for international water as quickly as we can.
That's amazing. Have you ever been, obviously, have you been chased, you know, and what did you do when you're chased? You got to be chased by these guys, too.
Well, you know, I've only actually physically been chased once.
Oh,
every other time I was able, they didn't know I was gone.
Ah, you outfoxed them, huh?
right. But once in the Dominican Republic, the port office actually was right next to the ship, and the ship had been seized, and I was worried about only 15 miles away in Santo Domingo were warships, and I knew that they would chase me. So I waited till a big storm came up, and then I managed to, and I hired a prostitute to trick the guard to get off the ship because there was a guard station on board. And once I got the guard off, I turned the ship and headed into the storm. There were some gunshots, but I don't think any shots were actually aimed at the ship. I think they were just warning shots. Then when the Dominican frigate tried to chase me, they couldn't find me in the storm because the heavy rain clouded their radars. And so I managed to get away with it. But that was the only time I've actually been chased.
Once is enough.
Yeah, once is enough, right.
Now, have you actually gone after pirates, too?
No, the pirates I deal with are they're like pirates in three-piece suits, you know, operating out of their offices.
Those are worse.
Oh, that's the worst kind. Oh, yeah, because, you know, as far as the Somali pirates are concerned, there's a very simple answer for them. Without being too bloodthirsty, you know, I have an answer for the Somali pirates. The pirates I deal with are much more tricky because you can't just shoot them. You know,
you'd like
too clever.
To, but you can't.
You'd like to, of course, but you can't.
How do you deal with them?
Well, you have to you have to know shipping at least as well as they do. That's the first thing. You have to know how they're pulling their tricks. For example, a ship thief might charter a ship and then send it to a port where he knows that he can have it seized by a corrupt judge.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going into that port, I have to know pretty much the situation, what it's like, and how to blend in so that people don't say, ah, there's a gringo in port. He must be here for the ship.
Ah.
And you have to make your, of course, I can't do anything all by myself. I have to make contacts with my local agents and people that I'm going to be using. So every single case is so different that it's really hard to generalize. But generally, it involves staying out of the authorities' way, not for them not to know that I'm in town or my crew is in town until after the ship is gone.
It's got to be a remarkable story. I mean, you probably have to work what, weeks or months sometimes on one retrieval.
No, I would like to. I mean, I would like to have the luxury of working that long. Normally, what happens is I get called in at the last minute, and we have a timeline. Like for example, the time I took the Maya Express out of Haiti, I was brought in at the beginning of the week, and if I didn't get the ship out by Thursday, then we couldn't act at all because the ship would have been sold at auction to an innocent buyer. So I had less than 1 week to. And this was a ship that had no crew. The machinery didn't work, so that I had to bring a tug in to tow it out. And Haiti was in the middle of the revolution, so just moving around the country was extremely difficult. So generally I would say that I get to spend probably a week to a week and a half in preparation. That's about all I usually get.
That's not much. Now, you say the ship, the engines didn't even work and you tugged it out. Then what do you do with it? Just keep tugging?
Right. We had a towboat that towed it to the Bahamas, and we had a lawyer, our client had a lawyer in the Bahamas ready to seize it for our behalf, in other words, for the mortgagee's, my client's behalf.
Uh-huh.
And the lawyer was waiting. In fact, we had the paper. The lawyer went out to meet the ship on the tugboat with the paperwork to make sure that we had everything done the moment the ship hit Bahamian waters.
Now, this is all legal. I mean, what you're doing, though, is legal, correct?
Well, it's legal under international law.
Oh, okay.
It's not legal under the law of the country where I operate, or if it were, then I wouldn't have to do what I have to do.
Oh.
So if I got caught in Venezuela or Trinidad or Haiti or one of these places, I would definitely go to jail.
So in other words, it's sort of like a Mission Impossible. If you are caught, we will deny you. Is that basically it?
Well, there's no one to deny me. Of course, my client wouldn't gain anything from that, so... But if I'm caught, I'm on my own. I mean, I can't expect my client to come in after I fail to get his ship out and do anything to rescue me. I can only rely on my business partner, Michael Bono, to do what he can to get me out.
Ever get close to being caught? Did you ever get caught?
No, never been caught. But I've come, very close a number of times. So close that I thought that the jig was up. But but actually, I've never actually been apprehended.
So you actually then plan each job like a military special ops mission.
Yes, it has to be very, very carefully planned because a ship is a complex organism, and what we have to do involves many different things. It involves, for example, to getting fuel on board, to getting the guards off, to getting replacement parts where something doesn't work on the ship and has to be fixed in a hurry at night. And everything has to go down very, very quickly. We have only minutes, maybe less than 15 minutes from the time we get on board the ship
to get
started in our job of getting her out of there. So the planning is very essential.
Now, what's the weirdest concoction of things that you've had to do to get a ship away?
Oh, I don't know. I once hired a house of prostitution to put their speakers. It was at a disco, but in Latin America, discos and houses of prostitution are virtually interchangeable.
Uh-huh.
So I hired them. I said I wanted a street party, so I hired them to put the loudspeakers out in front of the building, and I used that to cover the noise of the engine starting because the ship is right next to this little disco. So that was one bizarre thing. Everybody likes the witch doctor. I once hired a witch doctor to control an area of a port.
Tell me more about that.
Well, it was back when I was a ship captain, I got so tired of thieves coming on board my ship in this little port in Haiti called Miraguan, which actually is my second home now. But at one time, this is some 20 years ago, I hired a witch doctor to come on board my ship and put the powder on it. And I made sure that all the stevedores and all the Haitians around saw him do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was really funny because the Haitian stevedores, when they saw the witch doctor come on board, they jumped in the water and swam to shore. But so he comes, and he, in front of everybody, he gets his little powder out, his little bag of powder, and he puts the powder over the doors, and he mutters stuff, and he paints some strange drawings above the doors and so on. And it worked for a while, you know, but the problem was that my crew's girlfriends wouldn't come back into the accommodation.
So that put the nicks on that, huh?
Yeah, right.
So you got voodoo doctors, got prostitutes.
Yeah, if I'm going to keep my captain, I've got to let them have their girlfriend, so we'll have to put up with some thievery.
Amazing stuff. Now, what are the worst places to have to try and get a ship out?
Venezuela is the worst.
Really?
Because it's a lawless country ruled by a madman dictator.
Yeah.
So that ships are always getting seized in Venezuela for no reason whatsoever, just because they can. You know, just because it's not a crime of desperation, it's a crime of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And the problem for me in Venezuela is that it's a rather tightly controlled country. So your movements and people watching you and so on. I can work much more easily in places like Dominican Republic or Haiti, where there's virtually no operative government. Then, you know, that the lawlessness works on my side.
Yeah. Now, you worked against Caribbean pirates, Russian mobsters. How did they get involved?
Well, I once went to Vladivostok with a lady shipbroker.
Uh-huh.
She had a line on some Russian ships to be sold for scrap, and I had a Chinese guy in China who was looking for ships to buy for scrap. So she and I and a Bulgarian translator went to Vladivostok to buy these ships, but when we got there, the Russian mafia had taken over the company that we were going to buy them from, and the Russian mafia started threatening me. You know, that trying to force me to bring my client, my Chinese client, to Vladivostok with a bag load of cash to buy the ships. And I knew that there was no way I was going to do that, but they started looking for us, and this lady, I call her Annie in the book, she and I had to hide out, and then we had to leave the next morning very early to get out of Russia, but we did manage to get out of Russia.
Absolutely incredible stories. Now, you've been doing this for, like you said, what, about 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
You ever going to retire?
Well, I assume that I'll have to someday. I don't have any plans for it, though.
It sounds like you enjoy what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. No, that would not be true. I don't really enjoy a lot of it. A lot of it's desperate, hot, dangerous, dirty work. But I have to say I do enjoy, you know, getting over on the bad guys. It gives me a great deal of satisfaction to see a bad guy lose the ship that he thought he had stolen.
Yeah. Now, when you were just a good, just mild-mannered sea captain, were you invaded or by pirates, or did you have problems with pirates?
No. You know, the technical definition of a pirate is one who takes a ship by force.
Mm-hmm.
The people I had to deal with, the violent people I had to deal with, were not pirates because they weren't trying to steal my ship. They were trying to steal stuff off of my ship.
Oh.
So I had a lot of problems with bandits. I had quite a few fights with bandits. In fact, I'm looking at my wrist right now where I have some scars left on me from a fight with a stowaway. But I had a lot of problems with them, but you wouldn't call them actually pirates. We don't have that kind of piracy over here in the Western Hemisphere.
It's amazing. The stories that we hear on the high seas and some of the pirates here, like the Somali pirates, et cetera, it's like, do they have, I hate to say this, are they smart or are they really dumb? I mean, the Somalis went after an American gunship. It's like, duh, you're not going to get the gunship. You're going to lose.
Well, I wouldn't say dumb, of course, but these are untutored. The pirates who go out in these small boats off the Somali coast, they can't read or write. They're very untutored. They have no sophistication. They have been put up to this by the warlords. They themselves haven't got enough money to buy an AK-47. And they're expendable too. I mean, they're not, even their own families don't care so much as long as some money comes in. So the answer is that they're not sophisticated, and the only reason they've been having success is because there's a long-standing policy against merchant ships arming themselves, which is changing now. Once merchant ships effectively arm themselves, then we'll see the end of Somali piracy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing. How do we... I like the idea of arming merchant ships. It's just right. I mean, you've got to protect yourself, but just sitting there like a sitting duck is ridiculous, don't you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I've started another business called Ship Protect, which offers riding services, armed riding services.
Why don't they allow them? Why was there any law against arming a merchant ship?
No. In fact, merchant ships, until very recently, merchant ships carried their own cannon. And even today, when you apply for a clearance to go foreign in your merchant ship, you list how many cannon you have on board. Of course, nowadays you have zero cannon, so you just sometimes the form will just have zero put in.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that the form still gives you the opportunity to list the number of cannons you carry. So a ship can carry. A ship has the right to carry any armament up to cannon. So it's just been a policy that it was better to give in and pay the ransom than it was to resist, and that has proved so ineffectual that now the U.S. Coast Guard is now actually advising ship owners to arm their ships.
Well, like you said, you're not dealing with sophisticated people here. You're dealing with down-to-earth, grab a ship, get the stuff, leave. They don't care, you know, that they're willing to fight. They've got weapons. It doesn't seem fair not to have weapons on the merchant ship.
Well, that's right. And I'm happy to say that the world's attitude toward that is changing rapidly.
Well, all we have to do is see a couple of these ones that have happened where they try and seize people and they kidnap and all this. And it's like, no, you know, when it comes down to you against me, I'm going to win, you know. And then let's sort out the legalities of it later on because I'll be here to sort them out.
Especially since a ship is a natural fortress. You have high steel sides, difficult to climb. So that the people on the ship are shooting down. You have a solid bulwark of steel as a fire protector.
Mm-hmm.
You even have the scuppers where water drains out to use as firing ports.
Yeah.
It's a natural.
We've got to give more leeway to people. Like, if you're in danger, you're being pursued, or someone's trying to board, hey, you know, protection's protection. Like you said, that's their home. I mean, this belongs to you and the ship captain who's aboard. It needs protection, and they should have the idea to protect at all costs.
Yep. You're preaching to the choir.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Where do we have all this political stuff that drives you crazy sometimes? And don't get me wrong. I'm not out to just shoot anybody who comes up, you know, next to a ship or something. But if they're going to try and gain access to the ship when they don't belong there and they're warned off, you deserve what you get.
Well, when you see a skiff coming up on you full of men carrying AK-47.
Hello.
Although you can't really shoot them until you've established contact, because after all, they could be just driving past you on their way to a warlord meeting or something. But the moment that the armed vessel gives an unequivocal sign that it's going to attack you, that's when you unleash all possible force. And the good thing about these pirates is they're just like anybody. You know the old thing about your house doesn't have to be burglar proof; it just has to be more burglar proof than your neighbor's house.
Yeah, because they'll go after somebody who isn't, right?
Exactly. And so when they find out that they're coming up on an armed vessel, and maybe just some rounds across their bow, then they will almost certainly go try to seek somebody else that's going to be easier prey.
Is it difficult to protect a ship out in the open seas, you know, the high seas, especially at night?
No, in fact, it's easy to protect the ship. Night or day, because your ship is a natural fortress.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, the pirates, the ones that are going to have to try to climb up the side of that ship, they're the ones that are facing the tough job, especially if I'm on board.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, they should have more of you on board. it kind of have a second thought about trying to even do anything, right?
Yeah, if they're smart.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the most amazing thing of doing what you do? I mean, obviously, you enjoy what you're doing, or you wouldn't be doing this for like 20 years and want to keep doing it. What is it that makes you keep going to want to do the next job and the next job and the next job?
Bills.
Bills. Boy, I like honesty. But yeah, but you can find a job doing something else. This has got the draw and the danger that goes along with it, so there's got to be something inside Max that says, I really like doing this.
Well, you know, I like to think that I approach it as a business, and my partner, Michael Bono, and I, we try to do this as professionally as we can, and so why I keep doing it, that's probably a pretty complex question, but I like to see bad guys beaten and good guys triumph, and I think that, besides the money, I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, but you know, isn't it like the old saying, you keep pushing the envelope and pushing the envelope, after a while the odds start turning.
Well, that's probably true.
Yeah. The more you do, the more the odds are, dying. I mean,
yeah,
there have
been a few times when I said to myself, well, this is that time, but so far it hasn't happened.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. By the way, I understand that there's a movie that may be done on your exploits.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I had a nice long conference call yesterday evening with Tony Eldridge of Lone Tree Entertainment and Joni Levin and Keith Clark of Point Blank Productions. They just got through doing The Way Back with Colin Farrell and Ed Harris, directed by Peter Weir.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hot property now in Hollywood. Right. And so it looks like we're going to be moving forward with what they're calling The Good Pirate, the working title.
Who would you like to play you?
I was asked that earlier, and I said Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, really?
I'm just half kidding.
I mean, there'd be a lot, but I can see quite a few personalities that would have that. It's sort of like a James Bond in reverse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, because you have to plan. You have to. It's a Mission Impossible type of thing. You have to go in, like you say, most of the time you have less than a week to make it happen. Sometimes even, you know, 3-4 days. That's it. That's incredible. I mean, it really is incredible.
Yeah, there have been times when it seemed like an impossible task. And there have been, in honesty, there have been a number of jobs that I just had to turn down ultimately because it was just too difficult. Just the physical situation or the guards or whatever it was such that I just didn't see that we were going to be successful without somebody getting hurt.
Well,
so I would just tell the client, you know, here's your deposit back. I just can't do it.
But see, that's the intelligent thing. At least you're looking at the reality and trying to get the job accomplished. Just to go in there and get yourself and your team, and it could be captured, killed, all kinds of things could happen to you, and then not have the job done, you're looking at it realistically, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why I've so far, every time I've actually boarded a ship with my team, we've always been successful.
Ah, good for you. I just like your ingenuity. I mean, using the prostitutes and the voodoo doctors and all that kind of stuff. That's ingenious. I mean, you have to really sit down and concoct all these things. You're doing scenarios that are not traditional, let's put it that way.
Well, you know, it's really mostly it's not a matter of concocting these things. It's a matter of having an immediate need. And then, and of course, one part of that is knowing the sea and knowing what it takes to meet a challenge,
mm-hmm.
and then just searching about right then for an answer to that need. It's not something, a lot of this stuff is not something I plan in advance. A lot of times I go into the situation wondering how I'm going to do it, and I just have to evolve a plan as I'm doing it.
Run by the seat of your pants, more or less, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how long were you a captain, regular captain, before you went into this job?
Well, I got a captain's license in the Louisiana oil fields in the middle 70s, and I went as a ship captain in the mid-80s, and I left the sea in 90. So basically, I had about 5 years as a ship captain.
Okay. So you had a good an experience so that you know what it would take to be a sea captain, to be out there on the high seas. So you had the experience to go along with it is basically what you're saying.
Well, not only that, but I've been sailing since college. So I've been sailing my own boat. I've sailed solo down to Central America and back. And
no way, so, really?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I've done a lot of solo sailing in my own boat. So my sea experience actually predated my ship's freighter ship experience.
Jeez, I almost see like you almost like the Robin Hood of the high seas. That's kind of like.
Well, except I get paid, so.
That's okay.
I wouldn't say I'm entirely a Robin Hood.
Yeah, but you know, you're getting back at the people who really are taking advantage of, you know, the ship that doesn't belong to them. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, this is great. Now, do you have a website, by the way?
Yes, maxhardberger.com.
Oh, well, that's easy enough. All right, and the book itself, it's good reading. I mean, it's hard to put it down, and the idea, too, is that it doesn't seem like a nonfiction book. It reads like a fiction book, but it's not.
Well, you know, my training was as a fiction writer. I went to the University of Iowa, so it would be almost impossible for me to write something that didn't read like that, I guess.
Yeah, but this is true. That's all. I love books like that. It's like, you know, this actually happened. This actually happened to you. You've experienced this. You've been out there among them. It's an absolutely amazing story. You know, I commend you on what you're doing. It sounds exciting with the movie. Are you going to be a consultant on it?
Yes, I'll be a technical consultant.
Okay, it'd be kind of nice to see that what you write comes up on the big screen, because sometimes that gets changed drastically, and you don't want to see that happen, too.
Well, I'm more concerned. I know it's going to be changed a lot, but what I'm really happy about is the screenwriter has assured me that he wants it to be realistic, in the sense that one of my colleagues in the business will not look at it and say, what the heck, that could never happen. In other words, you know, to make it true to life, to the real world of shipping is what I really would like to see myself be able to do.
Well, we'll look for the movie and the next book. What's your next book? What's your next project?
The next book is called Haiti Adieu, and it's a sequel to Seized.
Well, I imagine you've got so many stories, it's unbelievable. After 20 years, you got to have them. Hey, Max, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
My pleasure entirely.
And I hope you'll come back again, especially when the movie's out and the next book. Just keep us in mind, okay?
I surely will. Thank you so much.
Take care and stay safe out there, all right?
I certainly will.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Again, that's Max Hardberger, Hardberger. You can go to maxhardberger.com. Name of the book, Seize.